It was a California August in 82 when my mother gave birth to the Spam Tech crew. 13 years later had me looking at Linux. Programming made me stronger like pop out of spinach. Now, people know that a DG carry weapons, but if that weapon is a nest you step in, we finish Contra with only one life. Finish Metal Gear 2 using only a knife, right? People might think that we're frontin', then they see all the noobs online that I'm putting. My rhymes flow just like my code, even though my source is owned by SCO. What about my Indian? I keep it low. See me on Gunbound, call me pro. I'm a certified legend, but I'm still your bro. This is a PSA, boy, the more you know. No. I'm a legend everywhere that I go. Every distro, every Craigslist, hoe pumping they fist, yo. Can't get enough of...
Hello and welcome to episode 8-5 of the Tech Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Desert Eagle Allen. And leading the charge today is my co-host, chili lover and friend, Sean Nola Kirkland.
Nom nom nom, good chili. Nom nom nom.
As well as my other food-loving friend, Eric Lou Swim.
Pork chops! Yay, pork chops!
Who loves him some pork. Now, before we get the ball rolling this week, and we get into discussing our weekly gaming indulgences, I need to issue a few thank yous. So first of all, I wanted to give a big shout-out to Randy Dickinson of VG Hangover and frequent retweeter Jeremy Lamont, who enjoyed our little SOCOM skit last week, and I wanted to thank them for plugging the show. Speaking of plugs, I know we get a pretty regular one from the guys over at Cheap Ass Gamer, who discuss the new releases on their show. And if you're a listener and you haven't listened to the KegCast, get on the ball. In my opinion, they're the best video game-centered podcast out there. You guys might agree. And
I've been listening to them for years.
Yeah, and Shipwreck Cheapy and Wombat, just all-around great guys, great chemistry, great show. And lastly, I know this is starting to sound like an Academy Award speech, so let me thank God, Dido, and ISA, and my dog Liberty Bell for giving me inspiration. No, I'm kidding. Seriously, I wanted to thank the listeners who helped make last week's show a huge success and one of the top podcasts on N4G. So, guys, you have our word that we'll give it all this week, and in the coming weeks, we'll try to entertain, inform, and season it all with a few poop jokes.
I
promise nothing.
No promises from Nola. Yes,
I actually wanted to send out a thanks to USMC Mike, who's listening over in Moose Ate a Koala, Afghanistan.
Moose Ate a Koala. I thought they were vegetarians.
I didn't even think of that one. That is awesome.
But yeah, he commented on the Zombie Cast from two shows ago. And, you know, I know we have quite a few listeners around the world, but when I heard that somebody was listening overseas, I guess you call it a war, it's still a war zone, right? Is that?
I think it's a theater of some sort, but I don't know. I don't think they like calling them war zones anymore.
It's a theater. Doesn't a theater sound so much nicer than a war zone?
I know. You go and you watch a movie.
A theater is where you go on Saturday night, take your old lady.
Michael Jackson popcorn gift goes here.
So, yeah, thank you, USMC Mike.
Hey, and if you're serving under Colonel Jones, tell him I said hi.
Okay.
It's possible. It's a small world.
It is. So who wants to kick it off? What they've been spending their time with this week?
Well, people were asking me about White Knight Chronicles, so I guess start with that.
I want to know because I bought it and I didn't open it yet.
Yeah, I don't think if you didn't like the first one. Okay, I like this one more than I like the first one, even though I haven't spent much time with the second one, if that makes any sense. I know they tightened up the combat, and I don't feel any different, but I'm blowing through it so much faster, which is satisfying. Like, I think I told you when you called me last night and asked me if you should break the seal, I got past the point where I stopped last time in the first night I played it. Mm-hmm. So somehow I'm getting through it a lot faster than I did. I don't know if that's because the combat's any tighter or what, but it feels a lot faster, which is good.
My beef wasn't in the pacing of the game, because I can tolerate a nice, you know, languish pace, but I think mine was with the combat itself.
See, I think it comes down to if you thought the combat in Final Fantasy XII was poop, you're not going to like this, because it's kind of the same thing. But I think I'm enjoying this one. It's kind of funny, though. They went out of their way to get the voice actors from the first game and the second game, which, it's my understanding, was pretty expensive, because they had contracts with Sony, who published the first one, and so they had to make draft all new contracts with them because D3 published this one, and then they had to have contracts with Sony to get the original voice work from the first game, and so they really went out of their way for it, and I don't think it paid off because the voice actors were pretty forgettable in the first one, and even though, like, going back to that first game, the delivery is not bad. In the second game, it's almost like they don't care. Like, you're like, yep, that sure is the same guy playing Leonard, and I guess he was just not feeling it today and just kind of got those lines out there.
They didn't give him the raise that they wanted.
Yeah, I don't know, but they I mean, they just sound a lot more bored in the second
game. Is there at least the Japanese voiceovers?
That's a good thing. I might want to check. I'll put something in the comments as one way or another.
A Blu-ray, there better be.
Well, it's a Blu-ray with two 48-hour games on it. So. Yeah. But I do like it. The one thing that I will say, though, is if you have the first game already, I'm not going to say go out and buy the first game, but the trophies in the second game are all performance-based. So it's like, you know, kill so many monsters, collect so much gold, you know, find so many items. So there's nothing specific to the first or second game. So there's just one trophy set for both games.
I see.
Whereas if you have the first game, there were all sorts of, like, you know, as you progressed, you got trophies. So there's a lot of trophies that get taken out of the first game because of that. And so you'll get a lot more trophies. I mean, if you're trophy whore, it makes sense to play it through on the original first game and then transfer your save over. And the other thing I'll say is that you can start in the second game, and you'll get all your characters will start at level 35, but your create a character starts out at level 35 with none of his points that he got for those levels assigned to anything, so that you can, you know, make your character however you would have made him if you were leveling him up. And you can actually, at the very beginning of the game, choose to have all your characters that way. But when you're starting out with 200 points and you have to go through each menu and assign each point to things, it takes forever and it's so boring. And if you don't know what you're doing, you know, you just want to start with the second game for whatever reason, you just end up with a broken character, basically. Ooh. You're like, I want him to be able to use all weapons. And then, oh, crap, he doesn't know any strong attacks now because I didn't focus him any which way.
And there's no reroll?
No. I mean, the idea is that you spec him out in the beginning and then and level him up past that. But
One of the things you talked about, was it last week, the week before, was the online community. Has that changed at all?
I have not played it online yet.
Okay.
I'm going to assume that it's much more sparse than it was when I played, because you remember that I played the first one right when it came out.
I just remember you said that everybody was beguiled by the smallest things in the game.
Yeah, and the reason I'm saying I think it's going to be a lot more sparse this time is that there was just no ad or no run up to this. I went and looked for reviews because I'm thinking about just writing a review. I had to go out and buy this game myself. I noticed there aren't any, and I don't think D3 sent any out, because I know we requested one and they didn't send it out to us. I don't think they sent it out to even the big guys, or if they did, they just didn't bother doing it. I haven't seen any ads for it. We are not the only new release list that forgot to put it on there. It's just like, it's out there if you want it. But
because they copy our new release list.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. Yeah, it kind of snuck past me. Picked it up because I couldn't handle a 90-hour RPG in all the games I'm reviewing currently. So who knows when I'll get around to actually breaking the seal on that.
Yeah, did you go out planning
to pick it up, or did you just kind of happen to see it and like...
I saw it, and then it had, over at Best Buy, it had some kind of bonus DLC, and God, stupid me, I fell for that and grabbed it there.
DLC is just an online pass that you can play the multiplayer.
How is that bonus? Shouldn't that be at every store?
From my understanding, that's what it is. Somebody was selling just that piece of paper on eBay this morning for $25.
Wait. The first game had the online component, so it should be in this game. How is that DLC? That's a core part of the game.
I think it's just, I'll have to check, but hold on. Actually, I've got the disc. So bonus game includes open it up. GeoNet license unlocks the online features of White Knight Chronicles 2. That's what it says.
Wow. Okay. So if you do not, and you purchased it at Best Buy?
No, I purchased it at GameStop.
Oh, okay. Maybe that's not exclusive content. Okay. I'll have to look into that further myself then.
Yeah. The one thing I will say, the reason I had a GameStop was because I was trading stuff in. And I don't want to say which GameStop I go to, because somebody posted in our comments one time they were doing things they shouldn't have, and I think they did that again, because they gave me the extra 50% for buying something used, which I don't think is going on right now. But basically all I did was I found a copy of Sheeran the Wanderer for $4 and bought the cartridge only, and then I got extra 50% trading credit, because I'm a jerk.
So look out, GameStop. Sean Nola's on the loose.
Yes.
You didn't even play Sheeran?
Not yet, but I mean, I know it's a good game, and it was only $4, but I did. I just, when I went up there, they're like,
that's the DS version, right?
Yeah, yeah. But I got up to the register, and they're like, all right, you're going to owe us $20. And I was like, what if I get this? And they're like, then you won't owe us anything.
Have Have you been playing anything else?
I started playing Valkyrie Chronicles 2 and also Valkyrie Chronicles 1. And it's, I mean, those are still good games, but it's funny how much I've been playing a lot of 2 because it's on my commute. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting how much worse 2 is than 1 without actually being a bad game. Because 1, the first game is easily on my top 10 list of games of all time.
Wow. Like,
one of my favorite games. And the second one, the core gameplay is still good, mm-hmm. but man, the story is crap.
Is it just story, or were some of the mechanics altered?
So the first game, the whole story is told is you're basically reading somebody's book, mm-hmm. and actually the person who's writing the book is a character in the game, who's like a journalist that follows you. And the second one, the way the story is told is you have a map of the high school, and you go to different points on it, and it'll tell a little bit of each student's story.
Mm-hmm.
Which is mind-numbingly boring because I really do not care that Joaquin wants to learn how to sew, but he's too afraid that the girls will laugh at him if he learns how to crochet a hat, but he really wants a new hat. I'm like, oh my God, I really do not care. I just want to shoot some people. But, I mean, other than that, it's a good game. I also thought it was funny that in the first game, you have an advisor and there's like radio chatter throughout the, battles where your advisor will be like, oh, you know, that was a good shot, or oh, you know captured the flag or whatever. And in this one, it still has the radio chatter, but it's all like super over dramatized, you know, war psychobabble crap. Mm-hmm. And so you'll shoot a guy and you'll hear a thing, he was such a good guy, and you'll be like, but this is a training exercise, it's not like he died or anything. And and every once in a while some guy will come on and be like, maybe after all this is done I'll go home and take care of mother. And I was like, that wasn't necessary, we're in the middle of a battle here, could you just like wait, that radio is important, we need that for things. Wow. But no, it's like I'm making fun of it, but it's a good mm-hmm. game. Like I said, that's one of the best battle systems of any RPG, I think, ever.
It's funny how a lot of Japanese games mistake just detail about a character for depth.
Yeah.
You know, where they deliver these kind of random minute details, and together all those formulate and construct a character. But they really don't. They're just like random factoids that players could care less about.
Yeah, and it's funny because the first game, one of the things I liked about it so much is that I really did care about the characters. And mm-hmm. I wrote an article on my Cheap Ass Gamer blog,
mm-hmm.
probably before tech gaming was a thing, to just basically talked about that and how I didn't want there to be a sequel because I could not imagine how heartbreaking it'd be if, you know, these people had to go through another conflict. And they tap dance around that in this one, but it's still like, hey, here's cameos from these guys. Anyway, damn it. But anyway, I brought that up because I want Blue to go out and buy that game because it's good.
I downloaded the demo for it yet. I haven't tried it out or anything, but it's like every Kmart I've been to has like a couple of copies of it, but they're still $40.
Buy it on PSN. I think it's only like 20, maybe 30 bucks.
It was on sale for 20 bucks 1 week, I remember.
Yeah.
Which is a great deal. That and, was it Phantasy Star Online 2? I think both those were half price.
Sega every once in a while does really good sales on PSN. And it makes sense to get games on PSN if you're planning on getting a Vita because the backwards compatibility is there.
Yep. So speaking of heartbreak, I want to talk a little bit about Ratchet & Clank All for One, the beta.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, this could be subjective. But a while ago, I read an interview with Ted Price. And one of the things he talked about was this underlying design principle for Insomniac. And that was this carrot on a stick approach where the gamer gets some kind of new trinket, you know, whether it's a new gun, boots, or what have you, every 10 or 15 minutes. And having played through every chapter in the Ratchet & Clank series, I can testify that the concept works. Typically, I'm glued to each Ratchet & Clank game. You know, I break open every box for the gears to spend, you know, to spend the currency on new guns, ammo, etc. The other thing I enjoy about the game is the combat, and it delivers this sense of satisfaction, occasionally with the help of Mr. Zirkin, who's now, and this is another one of my beefs, now a GameStop pre-order bonus for the next game, but the sense of satisfaction that I can eliminate this insurmountable, you know, kind of group of enemies. So you'd think that this would translate to a multiplayer game, but it really doesn't. Killing enemies or waves of enemies can be really enjoyable when you're playing some kind of horde variant in you know, online games. But for me, in All for One, breaking open boxes and killing the lesser enemies it just really feels like a grind here. And I guess my main complaint is that they kind of took out what I liked. They changed it and they just made it not very fun. And I don't know exactly what the tweak was. You know, there were some changes. But I can't quite put a handle on it, but it just doesn't feel fun anymore.
I was just going to ask, did you play Deadlock?
What is Deadlock? Oh, Ratchet and Clank Deadlock. Yeah.
Did you like that?
Is that the one where he got like a mega suit or something like that?
That was the one that was more
like tournament based.
Yeah.
Too.
So that's kind of what I thought.
I never had a problem almost in every modern Ratchet and Clank game. That's kind of the one game that kind of stands out is probably the least liked for franchise fans. And I didn't mind that game. It had its flaws and it relied too much on, you know, kind of tournament combat, which always had a place in the series, but kind of off to the side as this supplementary type of diversion that you could do, you know, outside of the main quest. And so I didn't hate it, but wasn't the best that the series has ever seen.
I thought it was a little interesting in this one how different characters handle differently, but okay. That's kind of the nicest thing I can say about it.
So when you're playing with the team, you're kind of forced to adapt to the cadence of the rest of your online posse, which for me, I enjoy, and this could be, like I said, subjective. When I play Ratchet and Clank, I play it very methodically. I grab, you know, each piece of gear, I explore for that magic, you know, kind of gold bolt, and I try not to get hit. You know, from the 10 games I've played of All for One, the pace was pretty frantic. People are breaking boxes, you know, they fight enemies, kill bosses, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, moving on. But for me, I really like to take my time. The other thing for me, and this, you know, may or may not, Sean may or may not agree with me, is the frame rate. Typically, Ratchet and Clank games, they kind of hover around the 60 frames per second threshold, which helps make the platforming and shooting feel really lively and make it come alive. Here, for me, it struggled to maintain 30. I know it's in beta, but I just didn't feel, or I don't think, that we're at the level where a developer can deliver a cooperative four-player experience online with a really fast frame rate. I know COD manages...
Frame rate didn't bother me as much as some of the other stupid... when you play a game with just three characters,
right.
If somebody else decides to join your game... Mm-hmm. It starts you all the way over. Those things
well, that I figure is a beta quirk, and I kind of look past that.
I feel like the frame rate's more of a beta quirk than
really.
You don't have four people. I mean, if they want you to have four people in your party, they shouldn't start the game until you have four people in your party. It shouldn't be somebody wants to join. Let's start you all the way at the beginning.
Or drop out.
Yeah, drop in, drop out makes sense. It's not like it's never been done before.
Right. And I just assumed that the final product was going to have that, but they haven't implemented that because they don't have the, you know, kind of servers up and running. But for the frame rate, there's a lot of areas where there's a gap and you got to throw enemies over. And if you're the last one over there, you kind of have to jump and then, you know, catapult somebody over. And I just didn't feel like the frame rate was helping me there. Every once in a while, I would kind of hiccup and I'd fall to my death. And it really doesn't penalize you for that, but it didn't feel very fun all the time. And the other thing was the camera. You no longer have control of the camera.
I was going to point out the same thing. Yeah, it's like it's a shared picture, which kind of makes sense in theory. Mm-hmm. What always ended up happening with me is there's always some guy who would just run around in circles and make the camera shake the entire time. And it's hard it's hard to concentrate on your character when the camera is focusing on somebody else.
And maybe I'm a control freak, but I want to control the camera. And
they made the map so you didn't have to, which I thought was all right. But
they also simplified things, you know, for that multiplayer experience. The levels themselves, you know, if you look at some of the old maps of the Ratchet and Clank games, there were these wonderfully windy, real vertical elements. And these ones, they just feel kind of simple. The best thing I can say were the boss fights were kind of cool. One of the things about the Ratchet and Clank is that they really nail is that you use almost every piece of ammo. And there's this constant threat. Hey, I'm going to run out of this particular shell. You know, I'm going down to like a little piddly pistol to fight this boss and I instantly kill him. And they did nail that. So they have, you know, kind of tweak that down. And so boss fights were fun, whether I played with, you know, two people by myself or, you know, with a full four, that seemed to work out pretty well.
You know what it kind of seemed like to me is that more of an evolution of Space Harrier than Ratchet and Clank.
How so?
Well, because so basically you would move a little bit into a new area. And then once you get to the new area, the camera's more or less locked forward. and you can only shoot forward.
Okay.
You know, there's like a little bit of targeting for when people kind of go off to one side or anything. Okay. For the most part, you're shooting things that are coming at you from the screen. Okay. And it felt a little Space Harrier to me.
Okay. I didn't see that. I honestly still don't see that connection.
Well, then you're a jerk. I don't like you.
But Space Harrier, you're constantly moving forward, aren't you?
And you're moving forward in this one. I mean, just the gameplay of stuff coming at you instead of you coming at it is kind of a moot point, you know?
Okay. Well, speaking of Space Harrier, I think we'd say that is maybe an early inspiration for Panzer Dragoon. Yes. So I want to talk about a game that reminded me, probably two parts Panzer Dragoon, one part retro homage. It's got things like Donkey Kong barrel jumping and dual wielding light gun, you know, little shooter bits. And it's a game that, well, often when I play a Kinect game, I just expect it to be bad. And with the Gunstringer, I didn't really have any expectations. I thought, well, it may be okay, a little wonky. I have liked appreciated Twisted Pixel's work in the past, but I'm actually really enjoying this. And the basic idea of the game is it takes a little while to get used to. It's kind of tapping your head while you rub your belly kind of thing. You use your left hand to move this puppet, you know, a little marionette, kind of left and right. And with a upward hand motion, you can make him jump. Your right hand grabs targets, and so you're almost using a Child of Eden type of sweeping motion on the screen. And then you make a gun motion. You point at the
like
screen.
Like you're drawing?
No. I'm actually pointing my finger at the screen like a gun with the index finger extended. And then I pull up to my shoulder. So you use this recoil motion to fire. And it works pretty well, but with two caveats. And the funny thing is you don't have to use your index finger to point, but it almost happens naturally. The recoil motion, you really have to go all the way up to your shoulder. If you just at your wrist, you know, move it up like you closer to acting like you're shooting a gun, it doesn't register. And there's some cover-based segments, and they don't feel as snappy when you're moving the puppet, the Gunstringer, as the on-foot parts. But once you get over that, the game plays surprisingly well. It's got this cool voiceover, almost like Bastion, and it's surprisingly fun to play. And I think the best part about it is that it's just packed with extras. You get, you know, the usual Twisted Pixel thing where there's movies to unlock, there's a commentary track, there's this bonus Mad Dog McGee-like game. It isn't very good, but it's a nice bonus.
Is it better than Mad Dog McGee? Or McCree, rather?
What isn't? A Stick in the Eye is better than that game. I'm not a fan. And then you also get, too bad I already have it, is the Fruit Ninja Connect. So you get a lot of bang for your $40. So I think it's an interesting game, and I would encourage Kinect owners if they are looking for something that works and is fun to definitely check it out. There's a demo on XBLA. Try it out, and you know whether it's to your liking or not, you know, move from there. But I had a good time. Here's my one concern.
Mm-hmm. So Gunstringer, the history of the Gunstringer development was that it was going to be a DLC title,
right?
And then after was it GDC? Microsoft came up to him and said, why don't you have an extra couple months to polish this up and we'll put it in a box,
right.
Charge an extra $10 for it. Does it feel like
charge an extra $10? It probably would have been...
$20, you think?
15, and it's selling for 40.
All right, so whatever.
I think definitely a short. You can finish it in about 6 hours. You do have to go back for the unlockables, but that probably would have been the case with the download, you know, version of the game. I think to compensate for that, they do throw in Fruit Ninja Connect, and
what I was going to ask. I was going to ask, does it feel like they just included Fruit Ninjas to make it a $40 game?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, right. I feel. And part of it is if you already own Fruit Ninja Connect, that's kind of a factor. If you already own it, well, then you might want to wait for it to go on sale. And, you know, if you don't, then I could recommend picking it up. But
Fruit Ninja Connect's a good game.
Yeah, it's solid. You know, it's kind of simple. I do wish that there was more variation in it, but...
I wish there were more kinds of fruit.
No, I wish you could split the fruit in quarters and do different things. You know, there's this funny, there's this knockoff game for the iPhone that's just like it, except you can split the fruits.
Fruit Ninja?
No. It's a knockoff game not made by...
I know what you mean.
...the guys. And you can split the fruit into quarters, and you'd be surprised what a huge difference it makes. Like, it's a lot more fun. And I'm surprised they didn't steal that back from them, whoever those evil guys are stealing from. Half Brick. Half Brick's the name of the studio. So last
Vegetable
thing...
Ninja.
Yes. eat your legume ninjas. Last thing I wanted to talk about this week is I got invited to an event where they gave me the new LG Thrill 4G 3D phone. That's a mouthful. So the event itself was this cross-promotion between AT&T, LG, and Gameloft, where they were holding this Nova tournament. When I got there around 6 o'clock, the thing had been going on for at least part of the afternoon, and somehow, despite my big old thumbs, I managed to get 14th place out of on the top 16 leaderboards. They were looking at like kill-death ratio. So enough bragging. I'll let you guys know about the phone and probably have a review next week. Supposedly, it's the fastest Android phone on the market, so I will be putting that to the test. It has a dual core Snapdragon CPU running it. Aren't there other phones that run at that same threshold?
There are other phones with faster processors than Snapdragon.
They lied to me. Okay.
I guess it depends on what their benchmarker is. I mean, fast can mean a lot of different things. Okay. I mean, they're not saying it's the fastest processing phone.
When it ran Nova, it definitely looked impressive, and it was pretty snappy. The one really impressive thing was HDMI output. It was hooked up to a good-sized television, and it did look pretty impressive. So one of the things I got to thinking about talking with some of the people that entered the event is that I could see phones either kind of breaking up or more likely creating this new market. I mean, with the increased kind of power of these phones, TV output, and the rumor that Ice Cream Sandwich is going to finally play nice with Bluetooth controllers. I think, you know, we're going to see this convergence that could beat the Wii U to the market. For that console, the main feature is you don't have to hog up your TV, right? And so this would kind of have, you know, take over that area of the market.
Huh. Looks like somebody's agreeing with something somebody else said during E3.
Was that you?
Yes, that was me.
Okay. So we're in agreement. The stars are aligned, finally. Anyway. so let me get tough on the downside. First, the 3D drops the resolution in half. And so what you're doing is taking this crisp image and making it kind of pixely. It looks like those, what do you call those things where you look at them, they're like postcards, you look at them from a different angle, and then they move.
Oh, like that.
And they have those little ridges on there. They have multiple images. What are those things called?
Help for a second out, there, I thought you were talking about those magic eye things.
They used to have them in like Cracker Jack. Is Cracker Jack price.
Oh, so, lenticular?
Yeah, lenticular.
Lenticular, okay. It kind of reminds me of that, the image itself. The 3D itself can be obscured when your thumbs get in the way, so when you're playing Nova, for me at least, I'd focus on my thumbs, I'd look at them, and I'm not looking at them, you know, am I on the D-pad, but just as I'm looking into the distance of the screen. And that created a little bit of blurriness that for me, I didn't get in a comparable, you know, 3DS game.
Touchscreen 3D is always, I mean, Iwata said that too, that you... Mm-hmm. A, the oils in your finger ruin the effect, and B, once you put anything in between any part of the 3D plane and your face, it immediately breaks the effect. You just can't do it. Did he say it in Iwata Says? I think it was in an interview right after they unveiled the 3DS.
Okay.
Somebody was asking why the bottom screen isn't in 3D.
Mm-hmm. I have to agree with both parts. Well, in daylight,
you know, if you have your phone up against up against your cheek, sometimes you will notice like smudges or whatever.
Yeah, and especially in daylight, nighttime conditions, you don't notice it, you know, as much. But during the daytime, it can get my HTC phone can get pretty ugly. Anyway, I thought it was interesting. They had a software depth slider, so you could kind of adjust the effect. And some of the games, they did have an impressive depth of field there. The only other problem with the phone that I found is that the Android home and option buttons were transposed from my HTC Inspire. I'm not sure what is the norm, whether it's kind of home option. You may know, Sean.
It's usually home all the way to the left, and then option.
Yes.
And then if you've got a trackball, that's in the middle.
Yeah, and this one reverses option. And home.
That's weird.
Yeah, and it was.
Although I feel like my G1 had the home in that spot.
My LG Optimus V has the option button on the far left, the back button next to that, home button, and then the search button on the far right.
Yours is all screwed up then.
Why doesn't Google, and therefore the OS, offer programmable so that you can set it up how you want it? Buttons.
The buttons technically all are programmable. The way it reads it just reads that your phone is having like five buttons, and I think home and back are the only ones that are constantly like that is a home button and that is a back button. The rest of them are just you know, buttons. Like the volume button doesn't always control volume. I know in ACV, that's how you turn the page.
Okay. So, and then the other thing was those buttons that I'm talking about, sometimes they weren't illuminated, or they weren't illuminated all the time when the phone is in use. Like, you know, I was just kind of learning how to navigate because of that switcheroo in darkened area. And then those buttons would kind of go blank and, you know, I'd have to find where that home button was because I wasn't used to it. So that's it. Interesting phone. I don't like it as much as my HTC Inspire. Oh, last thing. I got some surprised responses to the B+ I gave NHL. And a lot of people noted that I gave last year's game an A-. I just wanted to say for the record that I score each game separately on its own. And I really don't make comparisons when giving the final score there. And the other thing, I've talked to at least two of EA Canada's dev team, and I think they'll agree that NHL was a really ambitious title this year. They did a lot of things in a very limited amount of time. You know, a year is a very short amount of time, considering like the 3 years it took for Resistance 3. You know, they improved the physics, goaltenders, AI. But in doing so, I think that they neglected some, and this was my problem, some of these reoccurring problems, and maybe didn't extend the Be a Legend mode as far as they could. I'm not sure if you guys have seen NBA 2K12 or heard about that, but they have like different uniforms for different eras. I'm not sure how cool it is, but you move from like black and white, you go from that early 70s, that harsh kind of Technicolor, the big kind of clunky logos of the 80s to today's, you know, HD quality, which is interesting. I'm not sure, you know, if I really want to play an HD game in black and white, because when you were on the court in the 70s, of course, the world wasn't in black and white. That's kind of a weird choice, but anyway, trying to emulate that. I also still think that the Hockey Ultimate Team is a bit of a money grab. I mean, I really love the feature. The whole concept of fantasy hockey mixed with card collecting is awesome. But I think once you put real world money in it, you kind of force yourself to give players these kind of crappy four stringers to start with, because you have to cultivate this incentive that they'll want, that players will want to kind of reach into their wallets.
I wouldn't mind it so much if they had a business plan that was more like, okay, I understand it's a $60 game, right? I'm not going to say don't charge us $60 for it. I'm saying that maybe 6 months later you offer it for free.
You offer what for free?
The entire game. If you're going to have a mode in it, the entire point is spend money on this. Once hockey season is over, just offer the game for free as a download and then hope that people will spend money that way. Like
turn it into pay to play?
Well, yeah. I mean, the idea of having a $60 game that is then pay to play after that just...
But don't you think sales will plummet with players knowing that this is going to drop to free? You're going to cut your sales, your day one sales.
Sports games sell during sports season because sports fans want to play the game during the season. During the off season, people don't really buy sports games.
But let's say kind of a holdout. I don't want to spend money. I will play NHL 11 come October. When's the first day of the season? October 6th. Mm-hmm. You know, that one that went free instead, and wait 6 months. You know, even
so
if
the next roster. But you're right. Okay. So how about this? How about this? You've got the NHL 2011 engine,
right,
and you sell that for $60 without the card mode. Then you also sell a mode that's just the card mode for free.
Hold on. You just blew my mind. What?
So just the mode that uses the cards and stuff,
right,
the ultimate team mode, you sell that as a separate product, free-to-play game.
You sell that as a separate product, as a free-to-play.
Like, I don't need to own NHL 12 to play Ultimate Team.
Okay. Oh, okay. I see what you're saying there. I don't know. That might work.
So you sell the $60 game. You recoup your development costs on that. Mm-hmm. And then you have this other thing that's making money with the people who didn't want to spend $60 on a hot game. Mm-hmm. I think that's a much more reasonable way to approach that than saying, all right, the $60 hockey game, yeah, now go spend money on it.
And the thing is, if you don't spend money, you have to grind. You have to spend so much time, and you'll never catch up with the guys that spend money out there. And to me, that makes me not really want to play Hockey Ultimate Team, which is weird because it's an amazing, you know, it's an amazing idea and concept, and it should be fun.
What good free-to-play games do is they offer different incentives to people who don't want to spend money. So, like, for example, you know, the one I was talking about, Marvel Superhero Squad Online, anybody can earn silver, but the only way to get gold is either to get a monthly membership or to pay for gold. So either way, if you want gold, you got to pay, and there are certain characters that you need gold to buy. But there are also some really expensive silver characters, and you can't spend money to get silver. The only way to get silver is to earn it. So if you're the type of person who goes in there and just grinds away, eventually you're going to earn one of these really cool characters. And that's the only way you can get those. And so the idea is not that, oh, well, you're at a disadvantage because you're not going to spend money. It's that your play style is different and they're going to give you different incentives based on that play style.
I guess my problem with it is just out the door, you felt so far behind. And I think maybe launch, if you bought this at launch as a pre-order bonus, they gave you $10 or $15 in funds. That would have been really cool. And I think that would have kind of pushed me along a little bit more. And so that's one simple solution I can think about. So
you play hockey game, I'm all over that. I'm just saying.
Yeah, that is a good idea. Or take it back to 2K5, the NFL 2K5, $20 out the door. And then
I love that game. Best football game ever.
Yeah. all the 2K football games were really good. And they were cheap.
They had a good idea. Whatever.
Okay, now I gotta ask.
Yes.
Is NHL better than Wayne Gretzky's 3D hockey on the Nintendo 64?
Yes, NHL 11 was better than Gretzky's 3D hockey. And I love 3D hockey.
Wait. Gretzky's 3D hockey is the benchmark for all NHL games?
Well, no. NHL 94 is the benchmark.
Yes.
NHL game.
But
Gretzky 3D hockey had the nifty fighting mode in it, and fighting in the new NHL games is so much more satisfying.
I'm with you on 94. What if I admitted that I didn't play Gretzky 3D hockey?
How
did I not play that hockey game? I mean, I played Brett Hull. I played, what was that one for the SNES? You know, I played them all.
NHL Hits?
Maybe. Mario Lemieux. For the Sega Genesis, side view.
And you didn't play Wayne Gretzky? It's like NFL Blitz on ice.
Yeah. Well, no. NHL Hits NHL Hits was NBA Jam on ice. My bad.
I did not, when I owned a Nintendo 64, I missed a lot of key games. I guess that was one of them.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunate.
Yeah. That was not a big game playing time in my life. So, moving on. Blue.
Owned a Nintendo 64.
What's that?
I said it's because you owned a Nintendo 64.
Yeah.
Hey, now that's not true. I've played a lot of Nintendo 64, and that is a game-playing system. Damn it.
Right, and I played a lot more PlayStation games because they were available.
Yeah. And they were cheaper. I didn't have to spend $79, $89 for a cartridge.
I mean, I'm not bashing the N64 as a quality system with a quality game, but man, if that's all you had at that time, there were like months and months where there was just nothing to play. I guess I got Ocarina of Time. This had better last me all year because God knows when something else is going to come out.
Tetrasphere, baby. All the way through Christmas. You're playing it.
Tetrasphere is awesome.
It is. Not that awesome to last for months, like Sean was saying. Okay, Blue. Enough chatter. Let's get to it.
Well, before I get going, Sage has been posting in the outline, and she would like to chime in on Kirby's Mass Attack.
Oh.
She says, it looks delightfully lighthearted and delivers a powerful punch of pink, huffy fun. That's all I have to say about it for now.
Wow, you're hearing from her. Are you sure you didn't write that, Blue?
I'm sure. Yeah, she's right here in the...
She's right here. Okay. Virtually. Isn't that amazing? So, I can't wait to hear her thoughts on Kirby Mass Attack.
She also got a haircut.
Whoa.
Uh-oh. Is she still rocking the hawk?
I don't know. We're going to have to find out later. No. It's a cliffhanger.
I hope it's better than the Sylvester Stallone one.
Sylvester Stallone got a haircut.
Oh, no. Cliffhanger. I see what you did there.
Moving on.
Well, I've still been playing Persona 3 Portable, and I've put about 7 hours into it now, and I'm, like I said, last week I've been playing on easy, and I found that the pacing of the game has improved significantly, at least for what I want from an RPG. You have one session in Tartarus where you're just kind of getting your feel. It's like the tutorial mission, you know, where going inside and you're clearing one floor and then you come back out. Well, in the second time you go into Tartarus, you can grind as long as you want, pretty much. I think you can go all the way up to floor 18, I want to say. Maybe 14 or 18, something like that.
Is there a 13th floor?
Huh?
Is there a 13th floor?
Oh, yeah. There's a 13th floor. Of course, you can't, like, warp to it or anything, but it's there.
I'm saying, you know, in the United States, there's a lot of buildings that don't have a 13th floor.
Really?
You know, Sean, back me up.
Yeah, that is the truth.
Trick to dectophobia.
Go to New York City. That's actually a fun game to play if you're ever in New York City and going from building to building, is to run in the elevator and see if they have a 13th floor.
Fun games to play in NYC with Sean Noah.
A lot of buildings, the way they get around people playing that game is that since really tall buildings will have multiple elevators, so you have to take one up so many flights and then move to the next shaft. The 12th floor will be the lobby floor. So you go up 12 floors, then you get up the elevator, and then you go up in the next one. So it's like they never have to say whether or not there's a 13th floor.
You know, if only we could work in like some sort of a train horn in with pressing the 13th floor button. I've been watching too many of those train horn videos lately, and when you were talking about people afraid of the 13th floor, all I was thinking about was pressing the 13th floor and having a locomotive horn going off in the elevator shaft.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, but anyway, your Persona 3 thing is actually what made me think of playing Valkyria Chronicles 2 again, because I do think, you know, like the same crap that I don't like about the high school drama stuff is why I kind of never got into Persona 3 or any of the Persona games. Because, like, I don't care about your 16-year-old drama crap. But if you can get into that kind of stuff, you'll definitely enjoy Valkyria Chronicles.
I have the demo. I'd have
it. And then play Monster Hunter.
Orders.
Aren't there three Monster Hunter games on the PSP?
Get Monster Hunter Freedom Unite, because that basically has all the content of all the games.
And don't
so Freedom Unite is more or less the expansion to the second game. So it's the same story, if you can call it that. Same village. but it's got a couple extra missions, I think, from the first game. And some extra ones that are just there.
Hmm.
So there's just a lot more content in Freedom Unite. That is the game to get. And then there's another one that just isn't coming out here because Japan hates us.
Capcom hates us.
Capcom hates us.
Capcom.
That's the sad day of my life. But anyway, so what else do you play?
Another thing I've been playing is Tekken 6.
Mm-hmm.
I got that in. Amazon had a buy one, get one half off sale on PSP games or a certain number of games.
And that's a really good translation to the PSP.
It is. Home console Tekken 6, you had a lot more customization options and stuff like that.
Sure.
And I've forgotten how much content was in Tekken 6. You know, when I was playing Tekken 6 PSP, it felt perfect. I mean, it felt like a perfect translation, you know, without the Tekken Force mode.
Yeah.
The thing that always pissed me off about that Tekken Force mode was you play Tekken 6 with a joystick for the most part, but try to play the Tekken Force mode with a joystick, it just feels clunky and unresponsive.
So wait, so Force mode, it was the beat-em-up mode, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For two players.
Yeah.
They came out after the game launched.
Well, I mean, that's a throwback to Tekken 3, though, which, in my opinion, is still the best Tekken game.
I'm partial to the tag team.
Me too.
I've
played that thing in the arcades all the time. That thing sucked up a lot of money.
Tekken Tag was the game. I don't know if I've told this story in the podcast before, but when I was living in Kansas when that came out, and there was an arcade at kind of a strip mall in Leavenworth. And one day this guy showed up, and he was offering Tekken lessons. Like, he would, you know, if you'd pay him money, he would teach you how to be better at Tekken. And I shit you not, that is how he made his living. And it wasn't, he was kind of like a nomad. He would just travel from town to town, hang out in arcades, and then sell people Tekken lessons. And it was like some crazy Ronin story.
Right. What do you think this Tekken sophist is doing today?
He's probably dead in a gutter somewhere. I mean, his industry kind of dried up.
Are any of you getting Tekken Hybrid at the end of the year?
What's the deal with Tekken Hybrid? Because I haven't heard very much about it.
I think it's a 3D movie. It's only on the PS3, disappointingly. But it has the 3D movie, and on the same Blu-ray, it has a HD version of Tekken Tag Tournament. And I think maybe a demo for Tekken Tag Tournament 2, which looks gorgeous, by the way.
The movie itself, was that the theatrical release of Tekken?
I think it's a 3D animation.
Who am I fooling?
Version of Tekken.
Yeah, I'll probably pick it up.
Thought about redboxing the live-action Tekken movie just to see how bad it is.
I've heard it is pretty impressively bad. I can't remember which one everybody says is worse, that or King of Fighters.
Oh, I saw that in Walmart a few days ago, and I'm like, I think it's like going for $13, and I took a picture, and I was going to make a sarcastic tweet about it, but I think my attention span kicked in again, and I forgot about it.
The time has passed for making fun of the King of Fighters movies. I mean, they did. I cannot think of a fighting game that has had a sequel now that hasn't had some sort of movie made out of it.
Let's not forget the Dead or Alive movie.
Yeah, Dead or Alive. Dead or Alive's got a sequel coming out, too. So even though it's not good, I guess it's sold.
Wait, there's a Dead or Alive movie sequel?
Well, the sequel's not out yet, I don't think, but there is a Dead or Alive movie.
Oh, shit. I'm they better the bring back Kevin Rage Nash's face.
Wait, you've actually seen the Dead or Alive
movie? I have it on DVD.
Movie? Oh, wow. Sorry.
Pretty bad, terrible movie, but I recommend Netflixing it if you're... If you need a good laugh, and it does have a volleyball sequence, and it ends up getting
of course
ended abruptly yeah. by a ninja star, if I recall correctly.
Is that what they call boners?
What was that?
Oh, sorry, I was asking if ninja star is what they call boners.
No, this one was an actual sharp ninja star that sliced up the volleyball.
Sure, I can. Anything else you were playing, Blue, besides going over all the fighting movies?
Yesterday I picked up the Sega Genesis Collection and Tomb Raider Anniversary on the PSP.
Mm-hmm.
And I also picked up Final Fantasy Tactics as well.
Yeah.
Toys R Us had a buy two games for $20, or, you know, that are under $20, get one free sale. And I ended up loading up on a couple of games I've been thinking about picking up. And Sega Genesis Collection, that's a rebuy. I already had it on the PS2.
Yeah.
But I figured, you know, having about 30-something Genesis and a couple of arcade games, you know, on the go. That's worth $15 right there.
Oh, yeah. That's a must-buy for any fan.
Yeah, my only bummer with the PSP version was that it didn't have Shining Force 2.
Did the PS2 version have Shining Force?
No, the next-gen the next-gen version has it.
Sonic's Ultimate Genesis Collection?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that worth rebuying if you already have the Sega Genesis Collection on the PS2?
Do you like Shining Force? Yeah, do you like Shining Force 2 and Phantasy Star, the original one? And Golden Axe, what is it, Golden Axe Gaiden? The weird Legend of Zelda ripoff is actually kind of good.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know Golden Axe had a Zelda ripoff.
Yeah, it's for the Master System.
Really?
Yeah, it's not terrible.
But it's funny.
It's a brilliant endorsement right there. Hello, Desert Eagle here with Erica Leonard, who's the brand manager for the Cooking Mama franchise. Welcome to the show, Erica.
Thanks so much.
And what they wanted to start off, kick things off with, is talk about something that has fascinated me is Mama's appeal. When we went to E3, the team here, professionals and even our own Sean Nolo were flocking to have their picture taken with a person dressed in a Mama costume. And I'm sure that enthusiasm kind of extends beyond the trade show floors. And I want to get a little insight from you on what do you think is Mama's appeal?
You know, I think, you know, it spreads wide. It's even beyond the trade show floors. We have almost 400,000 fans on Facebook that are worldwide. I mean, she's so endearing and sweet and encouraging. And I think that just appeals to everybody. You know, she's iconic. She's adorable. And she's just, it's all about encouragement and support to teach you how to do those great activities. So I think that's really what appeals to everybody.
Awesome. Now, one thing that's often surprising is a peek into the demographics of a game. Has Majesco surveyed Mama's fans, and have you found any interesting details?
Yeah, I mean, our core audience is that those girls, you know, 8 to 12. Mm-hmm. We have a secondary target, really, of, you know, ages 13 to 17. You know, the game launched, or the first Cooking Mama game launched in 2006, so our audience has really grown up with Mama. Mm-hmm. And even when they were, you know, 12, when they maybe first started, they're what, 17 now, and they still love Mama. So we've really noticed that, you know, our audience is growing with the games, because we do come out with, you know, new brands, new genres, new themes, I should say, you know, constantly. I think that our audience is clamoring for more and really still always loves her. So we have noticed that our fan base has grown with the games.
Very cool. Now, one time Mama Mania might not have seemed like a sure thing. Do you know what prompted Majesco to take a chance on the franchise back in, as you said, 2006?
You know, I think we really saw the potential. She really is that, you know, quirky, adorable, really, you know, she's got that sort of simple artwork, that anime kind of look that's really, was really popular then, and it still sort of continues to be as well. Mm-hmm. And it really defined its genre. You know, there really weren't that many cooking games or any really at that time, and I think Cooking Mama was the first that really established the genre, and we really felt like it was a great opportunity for us to really kind of grow that.
Very cool. Now with Camping Mama, which is the latest entry in the Mama franchise, there's a little bit of cooking, there's some crafting, and some gardening. I was wondering if you could explain some of the activities in the game and maybe get into the specifics of one of the mini games.
Absolutely. So there's definitely the classics that, you know, everybody knows and loves about Mama, as you mentioned, the cooking, gardening. But there's even more fun activities. You know, it's rock climbing, swinging, skipping stones, you make a campfire. But it really is in the sort of the functionality or the gameplay that everybody knows about Mama. It's that step-by-step instruction to sort of create that fun. Mm-hmm. So, for example, for making a campfire, you know, you chop wood, you build the fire, you build it up, build up the wood, you light the fire, and from there you can even make s'mores, which is another activity that we have. So, you know, it really runs the gamut, but it even branches beyond what we've seen Mama do thus far with those additional activities. You can race, which is really fun, and you actually are playing as her kids. You're not actually playing as Mama, yourself for that matter, mm-hmm. And cooking and getting encouragement from Mama. You're playing as her kids.
And the mysterious Papa is in this game, right?
Well, he's right. Well, you're not playing as him either, but both Mama mm-hmm. and Papa, you know, they both provide that encouragement and that instruction and that sort of cheering on as you're mm-hmm. playing the games. But you're her kids. Ichigo and Ringo are their names, her son and daughter.
Very cool. Now, typically, there's kind of a skeletal narrative in the Mama series, and I understand that has changed with Camping Mama. Can you give us a little insight into the plot line?
Sure. I mean, this is really Mama's taking a vacation. You know, she's mm-hmm. always in the kitchen and, you know, hanging out with her friends and shopping and cooking and gardening and crafting and doing all that fun stuff. But this is her time to take a vacation, and she goes to a desert island with a variety of different settings. We see her in the mountains, we see her in a forest, we see her in the sea, in the ocean. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's all times of day and night. There's snow. I mean, it's really running the gamut of an outdoor adventure. So that's sort of the setting and that's the narrative. But she's taking a vacation, you know, she needs a break.
Of course, everyone needs one. Now, how much content is in the game?
There's quite a bit, actually. We have 38 levels and 100 mini games. And lots of stuff is brand new that you guys haven't seen before, which is really great.
Awesome. Awesome. Now, I can't leave without having a little bit of fun here. Now, let's say Hollywood yearns to turn Mama into a movie. What actress do you think would be well-suited to play Mama?
You know, it's so tough. There's two that kind of stand in my head. Mm-hmm. But they might not be old enough to play Mama just yet, but... Christina Ricci would be cute because she's got that little bob haircut. Mm-hmm. She's got the petite like thing going on. I think that could be fun.
Okay.
And Emma Stone, I think, is really cute. She's got the red hair, and I think she could sort of play that adorableness really, really well.
Yeah.
You know, maybe in a few years they would be best for it, but I think they'd do it really well.
That would be kind of cool. Now, wrapping it up, what is Camping Mama's MSRP, and what stores will be carrying Mama?
Mama is coming out at $29.99, and it should be available nationwide at every retailer.
Okay. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Erica.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Diva will fix it.
Yep. There go my eyes afire. You guys ready for some trivia?
Yes.
Yes, let's rally here because we all sound like we're dying.
that will happen when you talk about fighting game movies. That will kill the energy quicker than cyanide. So number one, the original Gears of War is often credited as inspiring a change to the original Xbox 360 hardware. What modification can we attribute to Cliffy B and company? A, an increase from 256 megabytes to 512 megabytes of internal RAM. B, removable base plates. C, the lack of built-in Wi-Fi, encouraging players to use a more reliable Ethernet connection. Or D, shoulder bumpers on the top of the 360 controller.
I'm going to say it's the shoulder bumpers.
The bumpers. Blue.
What was the first one?
Increase from 256 megabytes to 512 megabytes.
Now, is this before the system came out, or that they?
Well, yeah, yeah, obviously before.
I'm gonna go with A.
And you would be correct, sir.
The increase
of internal RAM, just so you could play Gears of War. Number two.
I almost guessed the faceplates thing because that just—I don't know—something about that seems Cliffy B-ish to me.
Faceplates.
Yeah.
You know, I have a Death Smiles faceplate that's just here collecting dust, and it makes me sad. So
that one didn't quite fit my Xbox too well.
Right. Number two, in this week's Xbox 360 iteration of Burnout Crash, players can use a variety of gestures to initiate a crash, which isn't one of those moves. A cheerleader rah-rah. B, Hadouken, fireball motion. C, a two hands forward, traffic cop style stop. Or D, lay an egg.
I gotta go with lay an egg.
I'm gonna go with two hands forward.
Correct answer. Put it in. No. Correct answer. Two hands forward. Traffic cop style. You're right, Sean.
Yeah,
how did you know that?
Yeah, I just guessed.
You just guessed? Okay. Sound like you were pretty sure about it. Number three. Kind of wish Sage was here for this one. Typically, Kirby can inhale food, not unlike the line of identically named vacuum cleaners. Which one of
these? Oh my God, I bet that's where he got his name.
Yes, which one of these delectables will a pink guy be omitting from his diet in Kirby Mass Attack? A, a Maxim tomato, B, an apple, C, a banana, or D, a strawberry? Which one will Kirby not be eating in Mass Attack?
I don't think Kirby's going to put a banana in his mouth again.
Again? Yeah. He's done it before.
Didn't he do it in one of the other games?
I heard he did it in college when he was curious. Correct answer, D, a strawberry.
Really?
Yes, Kirby likes the bananas. Number four, while this week's release of Persona 2, Innocent Sin delivers even more lovely paper dolls, an additional difficulty setting, baby mode, a pristine soundtrack, and a new interface, the game does censor a few of the game's more controversial subjects. Which of the following wasn't a change? A, Hitler's name was changed to Führer and now wears sunglasses. B, Nazis are called Imperial soldiers. C, swastikas have been changed to Iron Crosses. Or D, all possibilities of instigating a homosexual relationship have been removed.
I'm going to say the Führer thing is fake.
Das Führer. Blue.
I think I'm going to go with the swastikas. C.
Correct answer, D, homosexual relationships. You can still have them.
I thought that
was... See, I was thinking that would have stayed in there for whatever reason. I don't know.
Me too.
It did. That was the one thing that did stay in there.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know why I didn't pick that one because.
Oh, I see.
Somehow my reasoning.
I think mine kind of got screwed up with that one too. Really.
Yeah. Anyway, next question.
Indie PC title Bunch of Heroes certainly has an interesting marketing campaign, which I don't expect to be copied from the big publishers anytime soon. What was it? A viral video showing one of the designers kidnapped and a threat to kill him if people don't tweet about the game. B, a press release labeling people who don't buy the game ignorant fascist pigs. C, the designers threatening to spam website editors unless they mention the title. Or D, a trailer which seems like a bizarre combination of Lady Gaga, Keyboard Cat, Hamster Dance, and a dozen other internet memes which didn't actually show any gameplay.
I actually think that last one could be a very popular thing for big publishers to do, so I'm not going to pick that.
No keep
going. I'm
going to go B.
Was B the one where...
fascist pigs.
Yeah, that's the one I was going to pick, too.
Correct answer, viral video showing him kidnapped and threatening to kill him. Yep.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and they're
wearing a good idea.
Lucha Libre masks as but, they're doing it, and it's set in Buenos Aires.
I didn't pick that one because it seemed a little too similar to, do you remember when Star Fox 64 was coming out? I think it was Star Fox 64.
Yeah, the promotional video that Nintendo Power sent out.
Yeah, where a guy wearing a Sega shirt and a guy wearing a Sony shirt kidnap the Nintendo guy and like try and force him to tell him about the game.
I love that video. I love it. I have the VHS tape around here somewhere.
I don't recall that. Well, that was that was an interesting time for Nintendo.
I think it's on YouTube.
Yeah,
I'm sure it's on
YouTube.
Sure
it is, yeah. Okay, mailbag. Let's open it.
Wait. I've still got my bonus question.
Oh, we got... Oh, I'm sorry.
And mine as well.
Oh, we got two bonus questions. Okay, bring them on.
All right, you can go first, Blue.
Oh, shit. Sean's going to stump us, I can tell.
Mine's about a game that isn't out yet, so you'll probably get stumped.
Oh, crap. In Golden Axe 3, a big feature was branching paths. Upon getting a game over, the game recounts what stages you played. What does the game say on the stage you got the game over in? A. Congratulations. Please don't death here again. B. Place of died. C. And you dead. Or D. Your tombstone placed there.
It's either B or D. I'm going to say B, though.
Place of died?
Alex, I'm going to have to go with put it in. I will go with D.
The correct answer? C. And you dead.
And you dead.
Ah, dang it.
I was playing it on the PSP before we were recording, and it said, and you dead, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to have some fun with this one.
You know, I was playing Deca Sports Extreme, and the translation of that one was pretty sloppy. It was something about in the pause screen. It said, even though this is a fun game, you should pause and take break. It's not really that fun. So I'm not going to pause. Okay,
pause,
Sean.
I mean, turn it off.
Yeah. Sean.
All right.
I'm ready for it.
All right. So according to the ESRB, which game or which upcoming game from, I won't say which publisher it is because I can't find the publisher, but it's a game that Deagle and Blue will like for the PSP, has the following phrases in it. Her torpedo tatas, the power of boobs compelled me, my manhood grows in direct proportion to the number of sodas down the hatch, and why is it the beds in the nurse's office kind of make me think dirty thoughts? as well as a reference to the drug trade and the words shit, bitch, and ass appearing in dialogue.
Do we get a multiple choice?
Sure. Is it A, Seventh Dragon 2020, B, King of Fighters 13, C, Fate/Extra, or D, something else? Well, let's just make it three of them.
Put it in.
I don't know. Yeah. I'm going to have to go with Fate.
Yeah, I agree, Fate.
You suck. That is the correct answer. Oh, it's Axis was the publisher.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that is told from a delightfully, female perspective, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just saw the story from Silicon Era.
Oh, okay.
Right? I was like, oh, yep, got to bring this up on the show. Boobs and anime.
What do you call a reverse harem?
Harem?
Is that the correct name?
I don't know.
Okay.
I just figured instead of a harem, it's a guy, so garum.
Garum, okay.
Marum.
Okay, now you know the name.
It's technically called a box full of man whores, I think.
Oh. Sign me up, day one. Okay, so. Tragic Outcast, I'm writing because you haven't become total corporate tools yet.
Yep, like too late.
Yeah. By the way, this segment is brought to you by EA.
I was going to say it's brought to us by the LG whatever phone.
Thrill phone, which I didn't like that much. So I scrapped
EA Sports. It's in the game.
So I scrapped up $60 to buy Gears of War 3, and when I'm picking it up, the game representative, pressures me into buying some pass for future DLC for $30, which would make God of War 3, I believe he means Gears of War 3, a $90 game. You think this is going to be a trend now?
I do think it's a trend, because if a popular game is coming out and they know they're going to release DLC for it down the road, and they can get you to charge, even if you pay a little bit less up front, it's good thinking on their part. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I think it's a good idea for everybody, sure. But the idea is you're benefiting because you're probably saving $10 by doing that. They'll probably release, mm-hmm. Maybe 4 DLC maps at $10 a piece.
Okay. If you buy them all. If you're
right. That's what they're thinking. They're thinking that if you buy it, you're going to look at it as if I bought this all, I would be saving $10. Mm-hmm. Usually one of the packs isn't worth buying at least. Mm-hmm. And usually less than half of people, I would say, actually download the DLC. So they're hedging their bets that they can get a couple extra people to play the DLC.
Mm-hmm.
And you're hedging your bet that they'll release, enough DLC to make that worth your money. So it's kind of, I would say there might be developers somewhere down the line where that's not a bad bet. Mm-hmm. I don't think Gears of War is really the game. I actually do think,
and one of the things I think is that they're still testing the water on the upper echelon of how much gamers are willing to spend. If you remember, LA Noire had the pass for $10, and now Gears and Blue, you were telling me of another game that was at a $30.
It was Forza 4, I believe.
Forza 4. Mm-hmm. Both are coming out.
I think it's
going to
have like 60 cars or something between now and April or something like that. And if you pay $30, right. You can get them all or something.
And I think if that's really popular, we'll see $40 and $50 till they establish that upper limit. But I think
20 is acceptable. I think 30 is a little ridiculous.
Yeah, but I do think that the Gears of War people who follow the series are pretty devoted and mm-hmm. probably... I don't know, are likely to drop $30.
My question is, and forgive me for not being a big Gears of War fan, but does Gears of War as a series have a history of good downloadable content?
You're talking to the wrong person. The one thing that concerns me is that you are pre-purchasing this content, which you really can't get a refund on, and it hasn't been reviewed or much as, brief bullet point, kind of press releases have come out, and you really don't know the quality of this.
Well, that's what they're hedging their bets on. That's what I was saying. There's always that one piece of DLC that nobody gets. Like Fallout, was it Fallout 3? Yeah, Fallout 3 was a good example of they had 4 releases, and people reviewed every one of them, and it turned out that there was one of them that just people didn't download because it didn't review very well.
Right.
And they're hedging their bets that, all right, if you pay for it up front, you'll at least play all 4 of them, and they don't have to worry about losing revenue on this one that they made that people didn't like as much.
Mm-hmm. I still think they're fishing for the proper price point for collector's editions. Mm-hmm. You have your $70, your $100, your $150. Every once in a while, you have your $300. And I still think they're shopping around and trying to figure out, for a game with a certain size audience, somebody's got the equation. If we sell it at this with this pack in, X number of people will purchase it.
Yeah, I think they've gotten a little out of hand with collector's editions.
I think the Tron one was just over the top.
Yeah.
The light cycle didn't even light up, if I recall correctly.
Yeah. It's a misnomer.
There are some collector's editions. When a collector's edition is really a limited edition, and it's actually limited... I think that's kind of cool. Like,
how many games actually?
Like Super Mario All Stars before the reprint?
No, Super Mario All Stars wasn't all that limited because I know there was a shortage of it, but it wasn't exactly limited. It was just the first run of that game was that crazy All Stars version of it. But was it like a special box or whatever?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was like it had a art book and a nice box too. It was a red box with like gold foil on it and a soundtrack CD.
But my thing is like, so Valkyria Chronicles, when it came out in Japan, there were, I want to say, 500 copies that came with a model tank. Is the model of the Edelweiss, which is the tank that you get in the game. I mean, 500, limited to 500 copies, that's a limited edition collector's item. And if you are a collector and you sought one of those out, it is worth money now. If you are a collector and you go to GameStop, you will get a Hellgast edition for cheaper than an actual new copy of the disc-based game because they take up too much shelf space and they made bajillions of them.
They can't get rid of those Aliens versus Predator facehuggers quick enough.
I actually haven't seen one of those. I would maybe buy one of those. Probably not.
There is a GameStop locally that has, I think, 6 of those.
Have they clearance them out yet?
I don't know. I'm on the verge of probably picking one up finally. I don't know what the fuck I'm going to do with Facehugger, but yeah.
Robotech was another one. When the Robotech game came out for PS2 and Xbox and GameCube, the collector's edition was a tin with a t-shirt, a set of dog tags, and I want to say a DVD, and then the game. And for whatever reason, the GameCube version of that game did not sell very well. So I remember the GameStop by my house back in New Orleans had this nasty, crusty-looking, unopened Robotech tin, and I never bought it, even though I loved that game because I didn't have a GameCube at the time.
You should have bought it for the future.
Yeah, I bought it for Xbox. I actually did like that game.
I think something like that would probably do pretty well with Call of Duty.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Call of Duty is the one game that it makes sense for because they have shown like that they consistently have good downloadable content that people enjoy.
Everybody who plays Call of Duty always buys the DLC. It's like practically guaranteed, really.
Once people have made the purchase and a significant number of people have already, you know, put the money down, where's the incentive to really deliver?
Well, the DLC is usually done before the game ships now.
Yeah, I guess so. Mm-hmm.
I mean, the idea behind DLC was this idea that you could add content later and continue to develop it, but nobody does that.
Yeah.
They should.
It's all part of the equation now. Yeah, you're right.
I would love for, so in the case of White Knight Chronicles 2, I would love to have 2 years later turned on my system and said, hey, here's 30 more hours to that game that you finished playing last year. $20. Go for it. You know, that would be great, but nobody's actually doing that. So screw them.
Next question. Because of last week, favorite anime series and movies?
Excel Saga, Trigun, and...
Yes!
Wait, what was that first one again?
Excel Saga.
Yeah, I just wanted to hear it.
What?
Keep the pictures going.
That's a funny show. That is a genuinely funny show. Oh, and Golden Boy.
For me, definitely Cowboy Bebop, Death Note. Was a big one. Movies, really enjoyed the two Appleseed movies. I think I'm one of the few.
No, I like those. That was back when I was in high school and junior high when we got the Action Channel and they would show anime late at night. Appleseed was all.
Yes, yes. Used to love that. They also had Vandred on there, I believe.
I also liked Pat Labor, even though there was the guy. I don't remember if it was Pat Labor 1 or 2, but the guy with glasses and the one lazy eye and the crazy long mouth that gave me nightmares.
No one said Ninja Scroll yet.
Mm-mm.
I've seen Ninja Scroll.
Not very good.
I think.
It's okay. Those were the first anime boobs I think I saw, though.
That's points right there.
Well, for me, obviously, Sailor Moon. That was one of my first anime show I ever saw. I think it was along with Ronin Warriors and Samurai Pizza Cats. That was an awesome show, and I don't think you see it too much on DVD anymore.
Ronin Warriors? I want to say that whoever published it in the United States the first time went out of business, so there's just no distributors here.
I wonder, you don't think it was D, because they went out of business, and I think they also handled Sailor Moon.
Sailor Moon's a much more valuable property than, what were we talking about, Ronin Warriors? But also, I know Deke, they were really good about selling off their properties to finish off their bankrupts, which is why you can find Adventures of Sonic the Hedgehog at any Kohl's you walk into now.
Really?
Yeah.
You can also see those things at like Walmart. If you check like the $7 and under rack or something like that, you'll see like a whole bunch of like $5 compilation videos. And I think they also have Super Mario Brothers Super Show. Of course, you can see that
Which is also Deke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that, you can also see that on Hulu, I believe. But last time I checked, you could.
Okay. So you guys that listen to the podcast, you can achieve self-actualization by reading our reviews, previews, editorials, and new release information at www.techgaming.com. If you like our opinions on gaming and pretty much anything else, you can follow us on Twitter. I'm Robert Allen, @tech_gaming. Sean, where can they find you?
I am at Sean Nola with 2 N's.
Remember that running joke?
Yeah, but I stopped looking up words that start with N.
Yeah. And Samurage isn't with us. You could find her at Samurage. Is she moved beyond 10 yet? Magic 10?
Magic 10? Oh, followers?
Yes.
I don't know. I thought she had more than that.
And Superstar Windman. Unless it's Wingman, is @BlueSwim.
That's a me.
You want to explain that moniker?
Basically, it's kind of like the two hands with Nola. I just kind of choose two random words that sound like they would be a really badass name for like either a video game or maybe like a cartoon show in the 80s.
Okay.
And then just kind of super glue them together and Bob's your uncle. There we go.
Mm. See, when the first time I ever saw you post anywhere, the first thing I thought was Swim Fan.
the movie?
Yeah, the stalker movie.
I've never seen that movie, but I'm also tempted to call my fan, if you want to maybe put an S on there, possibly, Swim Fans.
That would be hilarious.
Mm. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Check out our new RSS feed. Check out our new art and the good old poop jokes that you know and love.
And everybody say something nice about Rob in the comments.
Bye.
I'll have number two.
My handle is the Whitey Cracker, the progenitor of all the nerd rap that you hear in the day. There was a time in my life when the ladies didn't dig me. I didn't get laid and I didn't have a big screen. Now they line up to see me, asking for a freebie. Cool down, be less needy, we're a little greedy. Back in the day when no one cared, sitting in our basements, face it, hacking on computers, disassembling stuff, paid off in the end, now who got it rough? The beauty of the bard, and the world of the switch, make a new generation of us geeksters rich. We own those that made fun of us, try to make a run at us, beat us up in class, said yeah, there's a ton of us. Who's laughing now? Cause most of us your bosses, the rest of you are flipping burgers, smelling secret sauces. Yeah. This is the life of a mega nerd, baby. We doing things and we making it happen, right? From the trash 80 to a black Mercedes. No one can stop us now, cause we're keeping it nerdy nice. This is the life of a mega nerd, baby. We doing things and we making it happen, right? From the trash 80 to a black Mercedes. No one can stop us now, cause we keeping it nerdy nice. I hated gym, cause I never was athletic. I played a couple sports just to keep it copacetic. But I found more in computers than I ever could in hooping. Every time I wrote a go-to bitch, I had that baby looping. Basically, basic was the first language I spoke. And I was telling Apple deuces just where they could peek and poke. I had a 5 1/4 floppy. Label, please don't drop me. Used to load a million copies and no one could ever stop me. Live in the computer lab, no one could separate us. And I never did my homework, it's no wonder others hate us. I get A's on all my tests, so nobody could debate us. Now I'm shouting from the mountain, SDC, we are the greatest. Never get discouraged, just let your nerdy flourish. Cause we're native to this code, and the rest are all just tourists. If it ain't apparent now, then just wait a couple years. When your gas is getting pumped by every one of those queers, yeah. This is the life of a mega nerd, baby. We doing things and we making it happen, right? From the trash 80 to a black Mercedes. No one can stop us now, cause we're keeping it nerdy nice. This is the life of a mega nerd, baby. Mercedes, no one can stop us now, cause we're keeping it nerdy nice.
You are
and there's
not.
More cousins and more brothers and more babies, and you are the father, but you aren't the father, and you are the father.
You guys have way too much time on your hands.